Okay, let's call tonight's meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order, please. Could we get a roll call, please?
Merkin, absent. Cable.
Present.
Steele.
Here.
Barnwell, absent. Smith.
Here.
Holstrom, absent. Miller.
Here.
Thank you. Do you have any changes or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda will stand approved. Do we have any changes or additions to the minutes from September 7, 2016? Hearing none, the minutes will stand approved. And it's not noted on our agenda, but I assume we're going to have the typical opportunity for public comment on issues that are not on the agenda, not scheduled to be heard tonight. Any comments from the public on issues not scheduled to be heard tonight? Okay, thank you. Now we can go ahead and go on to new business. First issue will be the Cornerstone and Capstone final implementation matrix.
We're going to tag team this, Leanne and I.
Okay.
As you know, Zoning Commission, the C2C, Cornerstone to Capstone, comprehensive plan was adopted by the Board of Supervisors June of this year. It's a plan that we spent probably about a year and a half working on. What's before you is the actual implementation of that plan, which is equally important as the plan. It identifies basically the role and responsibility of each of the departments or the divisions with regard to the various tasks that need to be accomplished in that plan. And with that, I'm going to kick it off to Leanne. She has a PowerPoint that she'll go through.
Thank you. I'm going to begin by apologizing because I am taking a cue from Emily and Amelia that it's 10 after 5 and I'm leaving to get to the meeting in Maxwell. So my apologies. I will talk very fast. You guys didn't know I was going to ask you to do that. The slide presentation Jerry loaded is the same one that was shown at the joint work session between the Planning and Zoning Commission and Story County Conservation Board. Same presentation I gave at the Conservation Board earlier in October. I just want to, as Jerry mentioned, the adoption was actually the implementation, the first step in that implementation process. We're to the point where we're starting to get really where the rubber meets the road, the strategies, the action steps that we will then use as a county to track our progress on successfully implementing the C2C plan. That's the purpose that's outlined in the C2C implementation matrix. There's a list of acronyms because as planners we like to use a lot of acronyms. Stepping back to that purpose statement, after the discussion with Conservation Board, they asked that there be an additional statement added to the purpose statement that clarifies that there are some strategies and objectives that were in the adopted plan that don't necessarily have action steps in the implementation matrix. You see a lot of language in the Natural Resources and Recreation chapter that addresses strategies and objectives that we are already doing, very successfully doing as a county. This project team, as we developed this, said we didn't need to recreate that or add that as a new action step. We're doing that. We've been doing it for years. Environmental education is a great example. So those areas are not in the plan. When the plan is taken forth to the Board of Supervisors next week, there'll be a statement that says very succinctly, better than I just did, to the effect that there are some things that are not addressed, and it was done purposefully. Is that understood? Did I make that okay? Key areas of the plan, the action areas, correspond directly to the chapters of the C2C plan. That's the organizational framework of the implementation matrix. And probably the more important statement on this slide is that the action areas do not appear in any priority area. They just, again, coincide with the C2C plan, and then as they are drafted, put in there. And then the time frames, just quickly over this, the action steps are divided into four different time frames. might start from the bottom and go up. Annual or ongoing, there are just some like annual survey, annual things that the county will undertake. Then long is 6 to 10 years following adoption of the implementation matrix, so out to fiscal year 2026. There's only one item. That's why I'm going from bottom to the top. Then medium is 3 to 5 years, and the media is starting right now, and then up until 2018. Those definitely you see the more important, or the more prevalent ones being the media and the medium. The next few slides are all that I presented previously at that joint work session, and it delves into each chapter. I'm not even going to talk about these, because as you have specific questions about those chapters, we can talk about them. I do want to go to this next steps. Tonight is a recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission to the Board of Supervisors. The Story County Conservation Board took action on October, what's the date? It was a couple weeks ago. They did recommend approval to the Board of Supervisors. The schedule says October, or the slide says October 18th. If you'll recall, when we initially presented that, that was our target date. But because we didn't have a meeting in early part of October, it pushed the whole implementation back essentially a month. It's going to build on the C2C plan adoption. It will set the stage for our capital improvements plan that will kick off in December with budget requests, and then discussion of budget work sessions in January. And the monies really come in March when the budget's adopted by the Board of Supervisors. So with that, any questions? I'm really breezing through it because many of you have already seen it and you've had an opportunity to review the matrix before this evening.
I think it might be appropriate for the audience if you give the website and so that tell them how they can be able to read it online. Because it's really very interesting and it's not complicated reading.
You can go to, if I would know, we would pull this up. Story County's website is storycountyiowa, all spelled out, .gov. And then on the left-hand side, there are a series of tabs. And there's one that's just called the C2C plan. And then you click on that, it takes you to the C2C plan's homepage, and all the document is broken out. We'll be massaging that, making it a little bit more user-friendly experience, too, once we get done with the implementation matrix.
Any questions for the staff? It's been a long process in development, and this is just a fun step of actually making the action, the plan to make it work.
There's been a lot of changes over the course of that year or whatever it's been.
If there's no questions for the staff, we'll ask if there's any questions or comments from the public. There are none. So, Commission, we are looking for some action here on a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
I'll make a recommendation that we, motion that we make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors for approval.
Is that second?
I'll second
that. A motion by Miller and a second by Smith. Could we get a roll call vote, please?
Smith?
Yes.
Holstrom?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
The motion carries for a positive recommendation for Supervisor
Sensi. Again, I'm sorry.
And it's 5-10. Congratulations.
Perfect. All right. We need to appoint a member of the Planning Commission to represent the Planning Commission on the Confined Animal Feeding Operation County Committee. Council Andrews.
It was deferred at the last meeting in September.
And did somebody...
Carla was our representative.
Oh, was it? Okay.
She'd just been appointed our representative there.
Okay.
Moving off the commission. So.
Who among us has any experience with animals or farming? Not me. I have very limited.
A little bit.
You're the ones with sheep, aren't you?
Yeah, goats. Yeah.
Well, it's close to sheep. Come on. I nominate Aaron.
I can do that. I'd be happy to do that. Do you need a motion, please? Okay.
I make a motion that Aaron Steele be our representative to the Confined Animal Feeding Operation County Committee.
Second. Okay, a motion by Miller and a second by Cable. Let's just do a voice vote on this.
Okay.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. All right, done with that one. Now we're going to move into public hearings. Our first public hearing is for a conditional use permit from the Story County Conservation Board regarding a park, regarding a shower and shelter building at Hickory Grove Park. Staff, take it away.
Yes, conditional use permit number 05/16. Requested is to construct a new shower shelter building at the Hickory Grove Park. The applicant is here, Mike Cox, director of the Story County Conservation Board. Park address is 67464 250th Street in Colo. This is a vicinity map. It's in Nevada Township. The park is located south of U.S. Highway 30. It's west of 680th Avenue and south of 250th Street. A little closer view shows you the lake at the park. Again, this is a building, a proposed building that will replace the existing restaurant and shower, restroom and shower building that's located in the center of the campground, which is on the north side of the lake and just on the south side of the road, 250th Street. To the west is the sewage lagoon. It's about 1,000 feet to the west. And then to the northeast is the Country Living Court Mobile Home Park. This is the details of the campground. Again, the existing building is located in the center of that pod. There's circular-shaped interior drives that form, and again, it's in the center of that space. And again, it's primarily used for restrooms and showers. And there are 43 campsites. This is from the C2C plan for the designation as natural resource area, which is the green. Everything else would be an agricultural designation. Zoning map, everything that you see for the most part is A1 agricultural district, the actual photo. The yellow area to the north represents the R1 zoning district. For the most part, it's either a treat area or in agricultural production. To the east of that is the mobile home park. It's the residential manufactured housing district. Background information, existing buildings a little over 700 square feet. Again, it's constructed of concrete block material for the most part. It was built in the early 1970s. As we showed you, it's located in the center of the campground. It's on a relatively level area of that location. The campground is open from April 1 through October 31st. In addition to the 43 campsites, there's 11, they call them primitive campsites. They're primarily used by tent campers, and they have no electrical hookups. The plan is to remove that building again and replace it with a 2,700-square-foot shower and shelter building, which will come in handy during inclement weather. Height of the building would be a little over 17 lineal feet. Construction, material-wise, will be about the same block construction. The top quarter will have natural wood material. We've got, Mike provided some drawings of a building similar to what they want to build at the park there that's currently located in Woodbury County, and we'll show you that as well. The new building will have 8 restrooms, 3 showers, and then again, storm shelter space to accommodate 192 people. There's 3 parking areas surrounding the building, currently 15 spaces. With the new design, there'll be about 16 spaces, and 2 of those will be handicapped parking spaces. The sewage lagoon was built and permitted by the Iowa DNR back in 67. The wastewater from the existing building, beach house, which is located to the south, it's on the east side of the lake, And then there's an RV dumping pit to the west of that existing building. It all flows to that sewage lagoon. They do have some plans to add additional campsites in another location at the park, as well as additional cabins. They're working with an engineer right now to design a new system. And they're also working on a partnership with the Iowa Central Water Association and the Country Living Mobile Home Park across the road. They're having some issues with one of their cells, and so they're trying to work out a design that would accommodate both uses. So, again, the what's proposed as far as the new campsites and the new cabins, those wouldn't take place until that new system is constructed. The Story County Land Development Regulations do require a 20% landscaping area for impervious surfaces that are added. They have indicated that they will meet that requirement. They've also indicated that they'll meet the Iowa Stormwater Management Manual requirements for stormwater and the SUDIS guidelines for erosion control. With regard to the bidding, the plan is to have the Board of Supervisors open and make a selection on the contractors November 15, and they would like to have the building constructed by next spring, April 2017. These are drawings provided by FEH Design, their consultants. The drawing to the left, for the most part, shows the existing building in the center of that site area. Again, it's a little over 700 square feet. The drawing to the right shows the footprint of the new building with the three parking areas. Depending on the dollar amounts and the bids, there may be paved parking spaces for the handicapped spots, as well as the sidewalk areas that are shown extending out from the parking that lead to the building. This is the footprint layout of the proposed building. Again, with this design, it would include 8 restrooms, 3 showers, and a storm shelter space that could accommodate up to 192 people. Elevation drawings. Again, it's about 17 feet in height. These are the drawings that Mike provided. This is pretty much a replica of what they're proposing to build. It's currently in Woodbury County. So you see block construction, wood material. Another view. Interior views. This space would, again, during a storm, would provide space for campers, as well as, in this case, potentially people from the mobile home park across the street. We're into the site photos. This is the corner of 680th Avenue and 250th. This is the actual entrance off of 250th. We're going to the west. This is the existing building. Again, it's a multi-restroom and shower building. A little closer view. Right now, all the parking and the walkway too is a cinder material. Currently, there's one handicapped parking space designated. This is the freshwater pump and wastewater dumping station. Again, it's used by the campers. And that area will not be impacted with this new design. That'll stay there. And then, since I was at the lake early in the morning, I had to take a view for good measure. It was 7:50 in the morning. I had to take that shot. Had a moment. So we're in the standards of approval. The first thing that we look at is the compatibility. The proposed building, again, will be constructed similar to the current building, a block concrete material. It'll also have wood material on the upper quarter. Materials will closely match the existing building. Transition, the building would be located about 200 feet from the north property line, south right-of-way line of 250th. There's also trees that are existing. There's a couple of trees that they're going to remove because they're diseased, and they have indicated and provided species names of those, and so those will be replaced. Traffic, for the most part, they're not planning to add any additional campsites here with this project. So traffic, on the local roads and the interior drives throughout should not be impacted with this project. Parking, again, depending on the bids, they may be paving. They will be adding additional spaces, but again, depending on what the bids come out at, they may be adding paving for handicapped accessible spaces, as well as the sidewalks leading to the building. Signs, there's no signs proposed. Lighting, they did provide some information on wall pack lights. They all have the cutoffs, so the light will be directed downward. And again, we're about 200 feet from that north property line here. Impact to the site should be minimal. It's under an acre, so that puts it under the county's requirement. We made that one of the conditions that they provide us with a drawing on how they're going to meet the erosion control. They can use silt fence, erosion control stock. So that's one of the things that we asked them to submit before they to include with their zoning permit application. Also, the 20% landscape area, which they will be providing. Proposed building is not located within the floodplain. It's not anticipated to increase the water load significantly or impact wastewater treatment. Currently, the information that we receive is that most of the campers are using their home facilities to take a shower, and they use that dump station when they leave. So they're either going to be using their own equipment, their own facilities, or they're going to be using this new building. This is the communication. We did have an interagency review October 27. Emergency management staff were there. They do welcome the opportunity. They're happy to see that this is a multi-use building that can be used in case of inclement weather as a storm shelter. They're very excited about that. Environmental health staff initially had some questions about the existing line that leads from the existing building out to the lagoon. They did do a successful dye test. For the most part, they do support this requested project. They are familiar too with the with their plan to add additional campsites and to make improvements, and are aware that they're working with an engineer to provide an updated design, and they do support that as well. From the planning and development standpoint, we did have questions about the bidding and construction schedule. Site changes, questions about erosion, stormwater control measures, parking spaces, a lot of the site improvement questions. We did send notices to property owners within a quarter of a mile, October 26th, and did not receive any emails, phone, or anyone in person as far as responses to this project. For the most part, the planning staff is recommending approval. Again, this is CUP 05-16. We are recommending the two conditions. One deals with the 20% landscape area of the impervious surface that is added, as well as the the erosion control measures that need to be provided. And so those are our two conditions. We're recommending approval. We're asking the Zoning Commission to support this. It would be item two. The Story County Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval of the conditional use permit as put forth in CUP 05-16 with those two conditions to the Story County Board of Adjustment, which would be the next level, and direct staff to place the case on the November 9 Board of Adjustment special meeting agenda. With that, I'd be happy to answer your questions, and as I mentioned, Mike is here if you have questions for him.
Questions for staff?
Yes. Would you go back to the two recommendations that you made, your department made?
Conditions?
Conditions. Submit the drawing, and then drawing should be. Just curious, why hasn't that already been done?
It was not submitted with the application, but it's something that can be accomplished. They've agreed to do it. And we made that a condition that they provide that drawing.
And why didn't they do it ahead of time?
It wasn't submitted.
I didn't take that.
Okay.
Well, hi, my name is Mike Cox, and I'm the conservation director. And also with us via teleconference is Ed Storm. He's our engineer representing FEH company, so if we have any questions, he's available as well. First off, I won't take very much time. I want to answer your question, but first off, I want to thank Jerry and the staff for working with us at a very 11th hour in bringing this forward. And frankly, this just was not on our radar. And I realized that once we were into the project and we already had a pre-bid meeting. So I really, again, want to appreciate the staff here and Jerry for bringing this in front of you and really doing a yeoman's work on a quick staff report, etc. So why weren't those two included? We being Story County, will do the landscape plan. And so since this just frankly wasn't on our radar, we didn't... What's that?
Not on your radar time-wise?
No, the conditional use permit. we didn't move ahead with a landscape plan, so we didn't feel we needed to pay an engineer to do a landscape plan at this juncture because we were planning to do that in-house. So Jerry has made it clear that we will need that and will provide that, but that's why we didn't have it. You don't have it in your packet. And the same for the erosion control. We've chatted with our engineers on the erosion control plan, and they will be drafting that, but we did not have it at the time.
On the 20%, it comes to about 300 square feet approximately. So it's the footprint of the building, the footprint of additional sidewalk that will be added to get to that 20%.
It's 20% of the impervious surface needs to be added to new landscaping.
Yes, 20% of that impervious needs to be for a landscaped area.
Okay.
Preferably where the grade is lowest, so it does the most, provides the most benefit.
So what you're telling us is that if you had made the effort to have it done ahead of time, you would have had to pay an outside engineer, and now you'll be able to use an inside engineer?
No. What I'm saying is that we did not anticipate going through a conditional use permit process.
Huh.
And so, therefore, we were not required to have a landscape plan or an erosion control plan. So now that we have made that awareness, we are moving forward with that, but we didn't have it at the time.
And how long do you think that's going to take?
I'm going to refer that to Ed. Ed, can you hear us?
Are you talking about the landscape plan?
Yeah, both of those conditions.
He's showing us how long it will take to do those two conditions.
I understand. Ed, are you there by phone?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ed.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. We actually have done impermeable takeoff. We just haven't done it graphically. We know how much of the site will absorb water and how much of the site won't. So I think this requirement to actually have us take our site plan and show the permeable and impermeable portions of the site and list the percentages, I believe.
And so we will take what Ed has, what we've illustrated in the site plan, and then add landscape features to that to illustrate that required percentage of 20%. So that's what we've done, the calculations on that percentage. We haven't applied those illustrations to the sketches yet.
Considering your timeline for construction, what's the latest to that you will require the conditional use permit approved, considering your schedule for...
So we're scheduled to open bids on the 8th of
right.
November and award and to consider award of a bid on the 15th of November.
Oh, okay. So this fella, is he going to be able to meet that time frame?
That the landscaping will not be in the bid. See, we were planning to do that in-house, so the county was planning to do that with county staff and resources. So the bidders are not bidding on a landscaping plan.
So, Nancy, to clarify, that the staff is recommending that they provide those plans prior to
zoning permit.
Well, prior to the zoning permit and then prior to any actual construction.
That's what I was asking, is what's the latest date for them to actually get the conditional use permit, the zoning permit?
But I think the short answer is that if we recommend it for approval with those stipulations, then it's really between, they can't get anything started until they get that done. So it really doesn't matter to us.
Okay.
I guess where it would, I guess where it would matter to us is that we felt as a body we needed to review a landscaping plan and erosion control plan, or if we can leave that up to the staff to handle it.
I absolutely agree with leaving it up to the staff.
Right. Other questions for the staff?
And really, these are things that the applicant and his staff could provide. They could provide these drawings. We don't specifically require that an architect or that an engineer provide this information. At some point in the future, we may have that as a specific requirement, but as of today, we do not.
Remind me which CUP category this falls under.
We're talking about public entities, counties,
okay,
building structures.
I see. So it's not a mobile home park, and it's not a private, some other type
public
of park.
Entity,
it's a public entity.
Yeah.
So it's a little strange because you have the county department asking for permission from another county department. Okay.
It is.
Any other questions for staff?
I think it's terrific we're going to have that storm shelter for those folks. I think that's fabulous.
You know, we've been working on this for so many years now, and there's just a lot of infrastructure that we need to update it at the park at Hickory Grove, and this is one of them that we've been trying to do for years. It's been vetted, obviously, with the Conservation Board and the Board of Supervisors. It's funded, with the exception of bids coming in over. We're really excited to move it forward. As Jerry alluded to, our emergency operations director is thrilled about it.
Yeah.
And to be able to have a safe place for our park users. That park gets used by about 70,000 people annually.
I don't doubt it.
And that part, the campground is full. As a rule, that campground is full from Thursday night through Sunday night. And many times, including Wednesday nights, through most of the summer. And so we can't meet the need for all of our camping and amenities. And so, this is an incredible asset for us be a good representation for our county's commitment to safe recreation.
Well, it can become a model for others.
Absolutely.
Are there any comments from the public on this particular issue? All right. What action would you like to take, Planning Commission?
Somebody else's turn to make a motion. Come on. I'll move a motion that we go ahead and approve or recommend approval of the conditional use permit. With the caveat that they provide the planning department with those two pieces, so obviously the one that Jerry's highlighted up there.
Number two.
Number two, yeah.
That one, the yellow one.
I'll
second that one.
We have a motion and a second by Miller to recommend approval according to staff's recommendation with two conditions to the Board of Supervisors. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Holstrom?
Board of Adjustment.
I'm sorry, Board of Adjustment.
Smith?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Motion carries, and a positive recommendation will be forwarded to the Board of Adjustment. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Is that your architect, Gil?
Yes.
Okay. Ed, say goodbye.
God, I love your background.
All right, we are moving on to CUP 713.1, Building Energy Holdings. Met Tower.
Okay, this conditional use permit application is for a meteorological tower. This is actually a major modification to CUP 0713, which was approved in December of 2013 by the Board of Adjustment for the wind energy conversion systems that have been going up just recently along Highway 30. So the proposed...
Hold on a second.
Yeah?
For those that's not so bright, wind energy conversion system?
The wind turbine. Yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry.
The big twirly things.
Yeah, those big white things.
See, the things that just got put up and they're turning yet there.
Gotcha.
Half a mile from us and we've been watching the construction.
Okay. The proposed tower is in Section 16 of Grant Township, and I'll show you a map. The applicant is Building Energy Wind Iowa out of Boone. The contact for this... this project has been Will Douglas, who's the owner site representative with Building Energy. On the nature of the request, like I said before, it's a major modification. The current request is for a meteorological tower, which I'll call Met Tower. It's a component of a wind energy conversion system that monitors the wind characteristics and acts as a control variable. So it will... send information to the wind turbine to make sure that the wind turbine is reading the wind characteristics correctly and functioning as it should be. So this will be a lattice type tower with a height of 275 feet. The base clearance radius will be 100 feet and there will be an 8-foot tall fence 30 by 30 around the base of the tower. Here's a vicinity map. Here's the city of Nevada here. Highway 30 I've highlighted in yellow. And we're just on the southwest corner of the intersection of Highway 30 and 590th Street. Here's the zoning and surrounding land use. It's primarily A1 agricultural. There are some pockets of commercial light industrial just north of Highway 30 there, A2 here, but it is primarily agricultural. Here I'm just zoomed in on the subject property. Here's where the turbine, Optimum, also known as Optimum Wind 6, it has been put up south of Highway 30. The proposed Met Tower is just to the south of that, about 1,000 feet south of the turbine. Here's a site plan. The Building Energy Holdings will take access from Highway 30 through the existing access to the turbine site. They will create a temporary construction road through the Collins property, which will be removed upon completion of the Met Tower. And that's about, once again, 1,000 feet south of the tower. Here's another site plan. This circle, this small circle here, is the clearance radius for the tower. So that's the footprint, I guess, the whole footprint of the tower will be just a 100-foot radius circle. Here's looking south from the turbine site. It's an agricultural row crop. This is the Collings Prop homestead and farm buildings here. But other than that, the area is in agricultural use. Here's looking north from 250th Street. I identified the turbine here. So the Met Tower will go about 1,000 feet closer to us from the turbine. Here's an elevation drawing of the turbine. Once again, it's a lattice type tower, so there's no guy wires. It's going to be about 275 feet to the top. So now moving on to the standards of approval for a conditional use permit. In terms of compatibility, like I said before, this is a part of a wind energy conversion system, and it really acts as the control variable for the performance of the turbines. And that was approved a few years ago. The property surrounding the Met Tower is an agricultural row crop and will continue to be in agricultural row crop production into the future. So the tower will meet all applicable Story County setback requirements. The property surrounding the Met Tower is an agricultural row crop, so there's not any structures within the fall radius of the tower. The nearest dwelling is about half a mile to the northeast, but on the same side of U.S. Highway 30. In terms of safety measures, the step pegs of the tower will be removed up to 15 feet, which is part of our regulations. In addition, the applicant will be constructing an 8-foot fence surrounding the tower with locking gates to ensure no access to the tower, which is on top of our standards. So it's an extra that they're providing for safety. In terms of traffic, the vehicles and equipment to build the Met Tower will access, as I said before, from the current access to the turbine, and then they will create a temporary service driveway to bring in the tower materials, and then we'll remove that driveway once the construction has been completed. The maintenance for this tower is very minimal. The applicant anticipates maybe once every 1 to 5 years. So the lease agreement with the property owner and Building Energy Resources includes compensation if row crops need to be destroyed. However, the goal it would be to do any sort of maintenance, unless, of course, it's an emergency, after the crops have been removed and before they've been planted. Planning and Development Department requested a written agreement between the property owner and Building Energy Holdings in case, because of the Highway 30 corridor study that the DOT has been doing, we just asked that they provide a written statement ensuring that they will work with Building Energy Holdings to allow access to these items. And we did receive that letter on Monday. In terms of parking and loading, during construction, which would be when most of the traffic will take place, the parking will take place on private property within the radius. Within the construction easement. No parking or equipment storage will take place in the right-of-way, and then maintenance parking will take place within the fenced area around the base of the tower. Signs and lighting. The proposed lighting of the Met Tower will comply with FAA regulations. During the day, one white LED light will blink 40 times per minute. And at nighttime, one red LED light will blink 20 times per minute. Those will be at the top of the tower. At about 50% of the tower height, there will be two red side lights that will stay on continuously through the night, and that's per FAA regulations. The Met Tower will not create any shadow flicker visible from grade level. The equipment on it is about 2 inches. The portions that move are about 2 inches in size, so there won't be any shadow flicker from the grade level. In terms of environmental protection, the Met Tower will have a minimum impact on the property. The base clearance, as I said, is 100 feet, has a radius of 100 feet. The combined footing mat, which is what the tower is built on, is about 20 by 20 and will be set just 6 inches below grade. So that won't go too far into the ground. And then silt fencing or sediment logs will be used around the base of the tower during construction to assist with erosion control. So just some analysis based on our requirements. We believe that it will not this is for the commission to recommend approval unless they feel that the development will not adequately safeguard the health, safety, general welfare, impair an adequate supply of light and air to the surrounding properties, unduly increase congestion in the roads or hazard from fire, flood, or similar dangers, diminish or impair established property values, or not be in accordance with the intent, purpose, or spirit of the land development regulations, which is now the county cornerstone to capstone C2C plan. Just some comments from our interagency review team. Story County Engineering Department just wanted to ensure that the applicant knows that 590th is a Level B roadway and is not maintained. And then that the IDOT had discussed possibly in the future closing access from Highway 30. The assessor just touched on that the tower will be assessed as a building on the leased land. And then the Planning and Development Department had just some specific questions about lighting, about possible co-location for antennas. Sorry. And then we asked for a copy of the FAA permit application, which they provided to us. Comments from the general public. We received a call wondering about the fall radius of the tower and what it was going to look like. We provided that information to the resident. She was also wondering about the potential for television reception interference. We did receive a letter from the from the engineer of Building Energy Holdings that said that there will be no reception interference from the Met Tower. And then that was shared with the resident. We did receive another comment via email about just asking about the potential danger of the Met Tower and its lighting to birds in the area. This resident had specific concerns about the steady red lights that will remain on, but the applicant provided us with information that these lights are necessary to comply with FAA regulations. So the recommendation, Planning and Development staff recommends approval of the conditional use permit application with the following condition. Building Energy Holding must provide an insurance bond for the decommissioning of the Met Tower before the zoning permit is issued. This is consistent with the way that the wind energy conversion systems decommissioning bonds were structured. So our recommendation is alternative number 2, recommend with conditions to the Board of Adjustment.
And the applicants are here too if you have questions.
Any questions to the staff?
Did they provide the security fence? Did they provide you with an image or a description of what that was going to be like?
We do not yet at this
chain
point.
Chain link?
Do I need to come up?
You can come up, sure.
Well,
actually, if you wouldn't mind, let's finish answering whatever questions we can with staff and then we'll bounce them off you too. Okay, thank you. So, at the moment, we don't know exactly what kind of fence.
Right.
I'm guessing chain link.
Yeah, that'd be my guess too. Okay. And
Any other questions? Yeah, I do. Are you done with
I'm just curious because I can imagine that even with a chain link fence, it could still be climbed.
Again, this is not required. This is just something they would like to do.
Right. But I know in our requirements, it states that if it's a lattice or essentially you want a sheet metal or wood the bottom so that someone couldn't climb the structure.
The tower itself?
Yeah. So I'm wondering if
Require that the step pegs to climb up the tower are removed up to 15 feet.
Sure, the fence is a step back.
The fence is set back far enough.
Create a radius around the base of the tower.
Exactly.
Within their lease area.
Yeah.
Well, in that connection, let's say somebody did, and this is probably a question for the applicants to answer a little bit later. So let's say somebody did climb the fence and get over there. What kind of deadly damage or injury could happen to an individual that did get over there? And the other thing is, just as a point of reference, this is 275 feet tall. The typical wind turbine is how tall?
The turbines are from to the very top point of the blade is about 493 feet.
So this is about half?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The other comment is from the engineer, the county engineer, he made the statement that IDOT may close 590 and he used the word near future. Well, it depends on what the definition of near is because it's not going to happen for at least 20 years.
Yeah, that area is being studied right now.
They took the ball and went home for a while and gave the money to some other project, so we're talking 20 years.
Just to clarify, this project is being considered not as a CUP for a communications tower.
No.
Which this is. It's a modification to an existing CUP for the field of...
The meteorological tower is a portion of the wind energy conversion systems in our regulations.
We've never had one of these before.
So what this is a major modification to CUP.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a major modification to CUP 07-13 that was already approved in December of 13.
Yes.
What's the major modification to the original CUP that has to come back?
The original CUP did not include the Met Tower in that. We felt that a 275-foot tower was a major addition to the...
Okay, so the original CUP was for the turbines,
just the turbines,
and the wind field.
Yep.
And then this is for the
Met Tower. Yep, the meteorological tower.
Okay.
Okay, applicant, you've got a preview of our questions, so if you wouldn't mind stepping up to the podium, tell us anything else you think we should know, and we'll have some questions for you, too. If you could state your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Will Douglas. At the moment, I live on 405 East 6th Street in Ames. I travel with construction. So, the fence, we haven't necessarily designed the fence since it was kind of an above and beyond thing, but yeah, it'll be an 8-foot chain link with locks at the very least, and it will be away from the tower. The base of the tower is a 19-foot like triangle set on the piers that's on a square like 20-foot square mat foundation, so the fence will probably be 30 or 35 feet by 35 feet to be away from the tower. So the landowners and ourselves, we felt that it needed to be an additional safety measure because myself, I've climbed communications towers for years and years and years. And I know that you can shimmy up them because it's an X. So to alleviate drunk, stupid people on the weekends.
The what?
Sorry, to alleviate people who might inebriate themselves and climb up a tower, we wanted to put up a fence.
Okay. And if they did get over there, how much damage could they do to themselves?
They could die. They could fall from 275 feet.
Okay, that's climbing it. But what if there's where's the electrical discharge or whatever that?
So if they then could bust into a lock, if they had lock bolt cutters on them, they could get into a cabinet where there is 120 volts house voltage.
Uh-huh.
Because basically we have equipment up tower, the little anemometer cups that just spin and measure the wind speed, and then the wind vanes that measure the direction. And basically, like Emily did such a fantastic job doing, telling you it's a control, just like in seventh grade science class, you have your water and then you have your salt water or whatever you're experimenting on. So that just makes sure that the wind turbine is measuring everything properly, and it's literally all low voltage. It induces the spinning induces a very small voltage, sends it down tower, and then there's some basically power that converts the signal into from an analog signal into a digital signal, sends it into fiber, which goes into our turbine and then out into the world. And that's all we're doing is reading the wind.
Which has nothing to do with conversion. Correct?
What about the conversion?
The result of the wind turbine.
The tower.
Being a wind energy converter?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with that.
The Met Tower does not. No, the turbine itself converts the wind energy into electricity.
Can you get...
But the only purpose of the Met Tower is to provide instructions, so to speak. In terms of here's how much you need to operate and start.
Actually, the piece of information you don't have is that every, or you may not have, is that every wind turbine has the same equipment on it, and the wind turbine tells us, oh yeah, this is, or tells itself, this is where the wind's coming from, and that's why they're always kind of searching for the wind, and they go into it, and then, they can work because they know that. So the Met Tower over here is kind of always checking the data with the turbines, Met Tower equipment, and making sure, correlating, making sure that it's right.
Thank you for the education.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you confirm the height of the nearest wind turbine that the staff had that?
Sure, the OW6 is, it's 87 and a half meters. I know.
I looked it up yesterday, I believe. It was 493.
That's to the top of the blade. The center of the hub is right around 300 feet.
So just a little. The center of the hub is just a little taller.
Just a little taller. Yes.
Okay.
For the top of the blade, when the blade goes up, yeah, it's pretty tall.
Is it typical for wind turbine field to have one of these towers, or how many turbines do you have in place before you say we need to have one of these towers for more information?
So that's science way above my head. But normally, like say I build 137 turbines in Minnesota, I have to have two Met Towers, one on each end of the farm. This is a little bit stranger because it's distributed wind and we're throwing it into distribution voltages and the local communities get to use it. So we were lucky enough to only have one, and it needed to be kind of in the center because we have one in Alden, one in Grinnell, and then a bunch in this general area, and the Collings property was lucky enough to be chosen as the best location to correlate all of them.
So in other words, will this service the three towers that are pretty much due north of Collings on the north side of the...
Yes, ma'am, and the one by the baseball field.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Sure will.
Any other questions for the applicant? Just a comment. So the... 87 meters is about 285 feet, so the Met Tower is approximately the same height as the tower minus the blades. Would that be...
That's correct. Basically, the top of it is supposed to be around the hub height.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So, Nancy, does that answer that?
Yeah.
This tower will be the same height as the basic tower.
That answers it.
All
right. Okay, any other questions for the applicant? Or anything else you'd like to tell us?
I just want to say that everybody at the planning office has been phenomenal, and I can't believe Emily went through all that. She did a great job. Everybody's been fantastic to work with.
Great, thank you. Now it's time to open the public hearing on this, which we will do and invite members of the public with any comments or questions to step up to the podium. And please give us your name and address for the record. Looks like we have no comments from the public, so we can close the public hearing. Planning Commission?
I make a motion that we recommend for approval CUP 07-13.1 pursuant to staff recommendations.
Second.
We have a motion by Smith and a second by Cable to forward staff's recommendation as our recommendation onto the Board of Adjustments. Good roll call vote, please.
Cable.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Holstrom.
Yes.
Miller.
Yes.
All right. You have a positive recommendation to the Board of Adjustments. This will be forwarded on. Thanks for coming. We're now moving on to a potential rezoning, the NICOS rezoning request, and we'll just go right to staff for staff report.
Okay. This rezoning request is located in Section 1 of Grant Township. The size of the rezoning area is 5.72 acres. Of a 14.78-acre parcel. The applicant is Alan McCoes, who resides at 1015 West Lincoln Highway, Nevada. The nature of the request is actually kind of twofold. The request is to make an amendment to the Story County zoning map. From commercial light industrial district to the agricultural district, and then to make an amendment to the Story County C2C comprehensive future land use map from the commercial industrial area to the agricultural conservation area. So here we are located surrounded on three sides by the city of Nevada. We're along West Lincoln Highway, just to the north. Here's the subject property. The zoning, as I said before, is currently commercial light industrial. The entire property, the 14 acres, is actually split zoned. So the northern portion is zoned A1, and the southern, about approximately 5 acres, is the commercial light industrial district. Like I said before, the city of Nevada kind of hugs this on three sides. We do have a commercial parcel here, which is the Story County Animal Control Building, and then two residential parcels to the southwest, both of which are owned by the applicant. So here's the proposed rezoning area. Once again, it's 5.72 acres. Parcel H was split off from the subject property in July of this year and sold to the county to be used as the animal control building. That use was there before, but they were leasing it from the applicant. There is quite a bit of flood zone on this parcel.
The entire parcel.
Right. Yes. Thank you. A commercial use is not necessarily a good one for this location. A little background. This is formerly the site of the Nevada Brick and Tile Works Company. As I said before, Parcel H was sold to the county for the animal control and shelter. The applicant is proposing to rezone the southern portion of the property to make it match the northern portion. According to the applicant, he would be able to combine this property with his with the property on which his home is located under one insurance policy, which would result in a major cost savings for him. But the zoning can't be commercial light industrial. So for those reasons, we have an application in front of us. And just to be clear, there is currently no commercial use taking place on this property. It's used solely as open space. Just some site photos here are looking north, kind of northeast from the south side of West Lincoln Highway. You can see here the Story County Animal Shelter building on the right-hand side. Now looking, just kind of turning northwest, here's one of the westernmost dwelling owned by the applicant, and kind of hiding behind these trees is the other residential parcel. Here's from the subject property looking south. As you can see, there's a residential development on the other side of the highway. We're standing now on the northern side of West Lincoln Highway looking at the subject property. This is the parking lot and kind of storage area for the animal shelter. Here's an image of the subject property. As you can see, it's a very nice open natural space. It's a really great amenity for the applicant. Another picture. And here's looking south at the rezoning area. So here I'm standing up by the pond, looking down kind of on the 5.72 acres that the applicant is proposing to have rezoned. So standards of approval, the proposed zoning shall conform to the development plan, or now the C2C plan. We felt that there are a couple goals that really spoke to rezoning this property, A1. And that was to preserve and protect and plan around physical characteristics of the land, including floodplains, which is applicable to this property. The other goal is land use goal number 8, which is to ensure that land use transitions are gradual. And we felt that this is as open space, this property acts as a good transition between the agriculture to the north and the residences on really three sides of the property. Here's a C2C land use map. So we'd be changing this to the Agricultural Conservation District and leaving this parcel H as the commercial light industrial. And here's just a version, I guess, of the future land use map that includes the natural resource areas designation overlay. So as you can see here, most of the parcel is included in that overlay. The second standard is the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district. I won't read you that, but this property does create open space with natural vegetation and makes a good transition between the agricultural and the residential uses. Shall be compatible with surrounding land uses. The northern portion of the property, which is actually the largest part of the property, is already zoned A1. The unincorporated property to the north is zoned A1 as well. And the trees and natural vegetation on the northern portion and kind of throughout the whole subject property, but specifically in the northern portion of the property, does continue to the north of the property and into some good natural spaces. This standard looks at the natural resource area designation, and if over 50% of the subject property is designated a natural resource area. It says a rezoning can only take place unless if it's going to a more restrictive district. And so in this case, the agricultural A1 district, which is proposed by the applicant, is more restrictive than the commercial light industrial, and so it meets that standard. So just brief analysis, the northern portion of the property is zoned A1 agricultural. the unincorporated property to the north is A1 agricultural. It's consistent with the statement of intent for the A1 district. And we just wanted to add that the configuration of the parcel would likely make it difficult to really accommodate any sort of commercial or light industrial use, just because of our requirements and because of the floodplain area. So then, looking at the C2C future land use map change amendment, currently, it's designated as a commercial industrial area. A majority of the property is designated, as we said, as natural resource area, and the agricultural conservation designation would provide greater protection to these natural areas. Just some comments from the interagency review team. The land will be assessed in 2017 as excess residential land if the rezoning is approved. Just some notes about the split of parcel H out of the subject property from the auditor, and then some basic just a few questions primarily on just some information on process for the rezoning from our department, the Planning and Development Department. Comments from the public. We did receive one phone call from a nearby business owner who had general questions about the rezoning and the planned use of the property. But after the phone conversation, there were no additional concerns raised. So in summary, with the proposed rezoning, there will be no change to the use of the property. It will remain open space. The property will continue to fit in with the surrounding land use. And then lastly, the applicant has no interest in conducting a commercial use on the rezoned area because of the parcel configuration and because of the natural resource area. So our recommendation is alternative number one, which is to recommend approval of the Story County Zoning Map Amendment from CLI Commercial Light Industrial to A1 Agricultural. And the Story County C2C Future Land Use Map Amendment from Commercial Industrial Area to Agricultural Conservation Area as put forth in the case rezoning 0116 to the Story County Board of Supervisors.
So what you're saying is that the in order for the proposed rezoning to be consistent with the plan, we have to change the plan.
Yes.
In tandem.
Yes.
And ideally, you'd like to think of it as changing the plan and then changing the implementation tool for the plan, which is the zoning district.
Right.
We're just going to tackle that all at once.
Yeah. Okay. We don't want to come back twice on that.
Amen.
And Mr. McCullough is here if you have questions.
Okay. Any questions for staff?
I just have one comment, actually, and I just wanted to say I appreciate the direct references to the specific goals from the C2C plan about, we talked about being involved with that C2C plan for however long that's been, and, I know Aaron and I were both on actually different committees doing different things as well, so seeing how that, we heard about the implementation matrices and all of these things, but seeing how we're actually using it with this is the change that wants to be made, looking up in the CDC plan where it is and how the changes fit into the county's plan, and then using that as a reference. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for staff?
Norman, I want you to repeat what you said about the change to the change to the change to the change.
Nah, I can't come up with that again. The one time deal. Mr. McCullough, would you have anything to add that the staff can cover? Okay. Are there any comments from the public?
The request or the recommendation.
Okay, I thought you got a thumbs up. Then we need some action from the planning commission.
I would move to approve the rezoning change using alternate number one.
Second.
Seconded.
We have a motion from Gable and a second from Holstrom to forward the staff's recommendation as our recommendation. We have a roll call vote, please.
Smith?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Holstrom?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes. Motion carries. Great. We're going to take a recess at some point, but we've got Marvin only for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, we need to be
at 7. So let's tackle a little more if we can. Now we're on to discussion items. Which is kind of nice. It's kind of nice to call the hearings out of the way and be able to chip away at some of this stuff. So the first thing up is the farm retail and novelty process for that proposal.
Yes. Yay.
Can I make a preemptive comment on this?
Yes, you may.
So having a little knowledge about how this policy was originally written, shows up in the definitions as farm, comma, retail and novelty. It's a retail and novelty farm. It's just a technical how you list it in the how you show a definition in a glossary.
Is it or?
No, he's saying the comma.
It's farm, comma, retail and novelty. So it's
is it or and? Because in the definition it says no. Or. In the CUP it says and.
Well, it should be whatever is in the definition, I would think.
Or.
We're going to go with or. Good to know.
I think the intent is or because a retail farm would sell actual products.
Right.
And
right.
Novelty would sell an experience.
Something, yeah.
Related to the farm. So, it's yeah. Thank the you language is confusing.
We appreciate
it. It gets confusing, but it does get important when we start having people come and present these things.
Right. You have to have retail and novelty.
How is this a farm?
Right,
first of all, and how is this experience related to the farm?
And I'm sure there's 100 better names for it, but just until we change it, we should be consistent, right?
Excellent. All right. So, farm, retail, and novelty, which is now or, so disregard this. as an introduction at the September 6th, 2016 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, we gave you guys a comparison of farm, retail, or novelty permitting process and compared that with home business permitting, and that was a part of the work program. Also on our work program is to take a look at the current conditional use permit process for farm, retail, or novelty uses. So this kind of addresses both of those items. Because the commission referred back to us, they would like to look at both the conditional use permit process with updated guidance and definitions, not regulation necessarily, as well as look at what a farm, retail, or novelty permitting process would look like if it was an administrative process, much like a home business permit is. So that's where we're at today. We're going to look at those two processes. So again, here are the two processes, and just a note, staff is recommending that we go with the updated conditional use permit process. We'll go into why here as we go through this PowerPoint. And another note that the administrative permitting process contains more specific standards, you will notice. And that's on purpose because staff needs direction on what to approve and not approve. And you can't do that if it's just some general vague. You must provide this. We need it more mandates or teeth, if you will. So on that note, the first change that we propose is a definition update. The current definition is off to the left. I'm not going to read that. But basically what we added is the fact that a farm, retail, or novelty should enhance existing crop and or livestock production, and it should also be ancillary to crop and or livestock production and not alter or detract from that primary crop and or livestock production use. So that's the proposed definition change. We also noticed that the parking ratios by type table in Chapter 88, Section 5, does not contain farm retail or novelty. So we proposed updating that as well, with one space for every 200 square feet of enclosed area, such as a building, and one space for every 1,000 square feet of outdoor activity area.
And that's written for like a maximum standard.
Right.
However, we are thinking about looking, well, that's part of our requirement with the C2C is to look at our parking standards, and we may be moving to more of a minimum type.
So this is just a placeholder until that happens, because we currently don't have a specific parking standard for this use. So first we'll look at the conditional use permit process and the proposed update to that process. As you had two great examples tonight, the current process is that there is a conceptual review of an initial application for a conditional use permit. Again, this is what currently farm retail and novelty permits go through. Then after conceptual review, comments from departments, there is a complete application submittal with an interagency review. The Planning and Zoning Commission has a hearing, makes their recommendation, and the Board of Adjustment has a hearing. Currently, the criteria for development and other standards for approval in that conditional use permit process are, there's six main criteria, as we saw tonight: compatibility, transition, traffic, parking and loading, signs and lighting, environmental protection. These are all considerations that you currently, with the current conditional use process for a farm retail or novelty, have to make. If it meets all of these six criteria for development, there are other grounds for denial as well, including if a use does not adequately safeguard health, safety, general welfare, impacts air quality or light, creates congestion and hazardous conditions, diminishes property values of surrounding properties, or is not in accordance with the C2C plan. So, we have proposed several additional submittal requirements to this current process. The first would be a written narrative, and that written narrative would contain several different aspects. The first would be a description of how the use of a farm retail or novelty promotes agriculture, the county's rural character, and how it is also accessory to the primary use of crop and/or livestock production. Another thing that the written narrative would have to include would be, again, a description of the proposed use, including how existing buildings would be used to their full capacity before construction of new buildings or expansion. We would want to know the proposed acreage, hours of operation, total estimated vehicle counts. We'd also want to know any potential negative impacts that the applicant foresees and steps that they would take to negate those potential negative impacts. Specifically, negative impacts on the county's rural character or agricultural production. We'd also want to have a description of the potential for dust to impact neighboring properties from the farm retail or novelty use, whether that's additional traffic, gravel parking lot, etc. So then, after the written narrative, there'd be several other submittals an applicant would have to make, including a dust control plan if it was deemed necessary from the written narrative, a sanitary facilities plan, working with the county environmental health department to make sure there's adequate Kaibo's septic system, etc. And also an overflow parking plan. And you'll notice that the overflow parking plan is kind of the, which one of these things isn't like the other one? It includes the requirement that the overflow parking cannot be greater in size, greater than 25% of the size of the primary parking area. So that is a limitation on that overflow parking. But it can be located on grass, and it cannot be located on any area that is not designated, including road right-of-ways, other areas people might get creative and park in. They also would need to submit an emergency plan, proof of liability insurance, and proof that they're complying with other local, state, and federal regulations like liquor licenses or what have you. So that is the conditional use permit process and proposed additions. Moving on to the proposed administrative permitting process, I'll go through this kind of quickly and just highlight some of the differences in this process. So in this process, the planning and development director or staff would approve, or designated staff would approve a permit for a farm retail novelty use versus the interagency review that goes to the Planning and Zoning Commission that goes to the Zoning Board of Adjustment. So that would be the approval process. Standards for approval would be similar to those that we just saw proposed for the conditional use permit process. However, I think you'll notice that these are a little more, they dictate what it should be and what is expected so that staff would have some sort of recourse on what should be approved or denied.
More prescriptive.
Exactly. Thank you. And so the first standard is, again, that the farm retail or novelty use should be accessory, and that's in regards to size and operations. So it should be smaller, essentially, than a crop or livestock production on the property. An effort should be made to use existing building or structures before new buildings are created, and any new buildings would have to comply with our next point, which is that farm retail and novelty uses should not impact agricultural viability or rural character, and expansion especially should have no discernible impact on those things. The main parking area in the standards for approval in the administrative permitting process would have to be at minimum a gravel base. The overflow parking plan requirement remains largely the same, and so do the dust control plan requirement and emergency plan requirement, the provision of sanitary facilities requirement, liability insurance. Some differences are also the fact that we would want to say in this administrative process all signs and lighting must comply with the land development regulations. We also have in there that the farm retail or novelty use must comply with all local, state, and federal regulations. This standalone administrative process would also have other conditions of approval. If it had the potential to create a nuisance condition, for instance, there would be conditions listed on the farm retail or novelty permit. If there were violations of standards approval, there would also be enforcement and inspection actions. I think you'll see that this is very similar to the home business permitting process that we went over at the last meeting. So staff's recommendation, again, is the conditional use permit process with that additional guidance. Why we recommend that is because it provides the public an opportunity to comment on these uses that are oftentimes more impactful and much larger than a home business permit, which is what the administrative process was modeled after. You don't have 7,000 people, 8,000 people on one day visiting your home business, and neighbors should have a chance to comment on that because of that impact. The process of a conditional use permit is also flexible in creating conditions based on those potential impacts. So that is why we are recommending that conditional use permit with the additional guidance. So I'd like a motion on your preferred process. I also like one on any guidance or standards, which ones you preferred, maybe some more direction on what those should look like.
So the first question is, do we see a clear advantage to conditional use permit process, continuing that in one form or another,
mm-hmm.
but we're not necessarily acting on the proposed changes to that process?
Just for guidance.
Yes.
Do we like exactly. that direction, or do we like staff just handles it?
Exactly.
Correct. More of an administrative process, like what we do for home business permit applications.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which would not bring it through a CUP.
Right. And while I'm tempted to just say, yeah, staff handle it, I think this is exactly the sort of thing that a conditional use permit process exists for, is to deal with issues that are going to be so unique from one case to the other that it's hard to write hard and fast prescriptive standards for.
Exactly.
So my opinion is,
in one form or another, we should continue with the CUP process for this. What are all of your thoughts?
I think, can I also say, yeah. So there's a lot of room for improvement compared to how we're doing now.
I agree with what Aaron said about the CUP process, and I would include in that the opportunity for public feedback, right, as a vital component of that. However, the guidance that you mentioned for the administrative process handled by staff was if there's, you know, little to no perceptible impact, right? So let's take an extremely small example. Let's say I have a farm, and I also have bees on my farm, and I want to sell honey, right? Mm-hmm. The impact to having people come and buy, if your intention is, I might have a couple of people a week come and buy bulk honey or whatever, but they want to do it, you know, above board, and they want to do it by the right way. Is the CUP really the right answer for something like that? And I would say no.
No, I agree.
Right?
I agree.
So I think there's an opportunity for, given your specific language about scale, you know, size, impact, that there's an opportunity for an administrative process along with the CUP process. Does that make sense? If there's a way to say you want to do a farm retail or novelty operation that is really going to be more small scale farm retail, probably not as much novelty. I don't see how the novelty part is a small scale to the point where it doesn't require a CUP. I can't think of an example. But if there was an example, right, I don't want to limit it to farm retail, but if it is the scale, the size and the impact of what it is that they're proposing, given the narrative, is so small.
I wonder if that administrative process could be add a burden. You know, do we need two separate processes, or do we need some clear parameters on what the triggers are to kick it into a CUP?
Right.
And I think that those are the toughest questions that we haven't begun to answer yet. Is when do you?
But I think that I don't think that the right answer is, don't worry about it.
I wish it could be more
right.
often.
I agree, but I think the right answer is, that falls within the administrative approval process, and here's what you need to do. And it doesn't require the meetings and the recommendations and the timetables that the CEP does, right? It's something that, yes, you have to do something so that we can document and you know, give it the stamp of approval, but without all of the timetables and without all of the, I'll say, official requirements.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about a scale and scope kind of thing. So if it's somebody, I don't know what the normal average beekeeping system is, if it's four of those containers, but what if somebody's got 500 of them?
Right.
And the beekeeping is not the issue. I mean, right? That's just an agricultural use. Uh-huh. If you're wanting to set up the farm retail or novelty, then the question is what's the scale and what's the impact? And it has nothing to do with the size and scale of the agriculture. It has to do with the size and scale of
what you're going to do,
of what
people
you're
going to attract,
of what purpose you're going to do.
Is there a time frame, using the bee example, the honey example? Hey, you brought it up.
I know.
Okay, are you familiar with that kind of an activity?
Yeah.
Okay, so what would be the time frame that the sales would occur? Is there a limited, or is that a year-round deal?
It's probably mostly seasonal, but it can be year-round. I mean,
okay, and that season would be
year-round. So.
Well, yeah, of course they do. But the seasonal sale would be about what? From what to what?
No, I don't want to limit. I don't want to give a specific thing like that. What I want to just focus on is how would we do it based on size and scale and.
Okay, what's the size and scale? Is that amount? Is that based upon monetary value?
That's what needs to be defined, right? And I wouldn't say monetary value. I would
monetary
say the impact. What we're looking for is the size and scale of the operation and the impact to what was defined, right? The property values, dust, traffic, all of those, right?
So yes. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead. No, please.
So we have the current district, A1 district, allows for a home business.
Right.
If it's limited to one accessory building.
I think we might have a homekeeping.
A home business is a beekeeping business that meets those standards.
I don't want to use beekeeping as an example. I don't want to use any particular business as an example. Just illustrative. But I want to go back to what we need to do is focus on, again, those definitions, the things that we can quantify and the things that we can define in a way that allows us to differentiate between here's what an Ag1 home business is.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where you step away from an Ag1 home business to a farm retail novelty. And here's where you step away from a farm, an administrative farm retail novelty into a CUP farm retail novelty.
Mm-hmm. So there's three levels.
Right.
So am I hearing you right?
I would say that there are. Right now we have two. We have a home. We have an administrative approval for a home business, and we have a CUP.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're proposing is there's probably a middle ground in there.
Now, Jerry, this is for your input. As a commission, I can only remember one situation that we had to deal with in terms of farm retail and novelty, and that was that thing south of town.
No. We've had multiple. Yeah, we've had Black's Farm. We've had the Center Grove Orchard. We've had and we've had a few others.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that you remember are the ones where they were
difficult
or maybe not really aligned with what the intentions of the farm retail novelty are. And you know, like in the case of Black's Farms, it was refused, and in Center Grove Orchards it was approved, but you know, that was still probably borderline. So I think that these happen more, and then they may actually happen more frequently, but we don't hear about them, right? People just go and do things. So
yeah, they just do it because it's a short-term thing and it's not impact
right.
on their neighbors. It's okay. I got excess apples, so I'm going to sell them.
Well, then it might not be aware right. that they need to get a...
I got to believe that without creating an extra layer of process, that there's a way to say this is either a home business that's permissible under our current home business regulations, maybe we have to tweak those a little bit, or it is some sort of specialty farm. And I think the key is, what are the triggers? Are they clear objective triggers that you can look at and not have to make too much of a judgment call as to whether we should permit it this way or this way? Maybe it's whether a building is required, or a certain square footage of building is required, or maybe it's anticipated traffic volume or number of customers. Maybe it has something to do with seasonality. Maybe it has something to do with whether food is being prepared and served on site. I don't know. That's why you guys get paid big bucks. But
you're going, yeah, right, huh?
I see where you're headed. I just think that you're going to create a process that you end up never using or hating to use.
Right, and I agree with your concept of let's expand the
home business.
The home business, and I don't know if the home business is by zone, right? I don't know if that home business is if we have like an
ag one zone home business,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a, you know, there's different types of definitions, but maybe we look at the agricultural home business and the farm retail or novelty, and maybe expand home business to include the things that we would put under an administrative farm retail novelty,
sure.
right?
In the ag districts.
In the ag districts, if you're going to do something from home that is less than this and doesn't, you know, do this, then you're good.
Okay.
You do that as a home business.
But then how do you find less than...
I'm not.
That has to be. That's hard.
Right. That's just a question.
No, of course. That is the question. Is how do you prescriptively differentiate between this and that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. How can you look at something and clearly identify and define?
Yeah, definitely.
What it is.
Right now, remind me. Home business. Would you say something about one building? The home business.
By definition, it says it can either occur inside of a dwelling mm-hmm. or one accessory structure is how it's written.
In the A1 district.
And it doesn't say you can have this kind of home business versus this kind of home business. There's nothing about that.
It doesn't identify specific
types.
Yeah, okay.
Types.
What's
the application fee for that?
$50.
So when you are looking at that, mm-hmm. and then you're looking at what the definition is of a farm retail novelty, right, then you kind of cross the streams, and then you can say home business isn't just one building or this or that. It's whatever the definition is of farm retail novelty, as long as, right, it doesn't do this or it doesn't do that, and it is consistent with this and is less than, right?
Sure.
What do you think about the guidance things that we identified for the CUP process? Do you think those things are helpful or not?
Okay.
The narratives?
Yeah.
Yes,
as far as additional criteria.
No, I absolutely do.
I think there's some very good things in there. It's,
yeah.
Again, it comes back to threshold, though, because you're starting to ask a lot, which I want from Center Grove Orchard, but I don't want
right.
from somebody who wants to sell $300 worth of honey in it.
I think that, again, that has to do with scale, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to bring in the day? No,
I
did.
Not, yeah.
I
didn't
know that.
That's part of
the business plan, right?
Yeah.
But I think that,
yeah,
if you're Center Grove Orchard, as an example, living history, then your narrative is going to be more complex, more complete, and longer.
Yeah.
If your answer is, I'm going to teach beekeeping, and I'm teaching classes, and I'm going to sell bulk and retail and buy products and whatever, and so I'm anticipating traffic. It's more than a home business, so it qualifies as CUP, but that narrative is going to be easy to write. That's going to be short, right?
Yeah. What would kick that into beyond the home business? The beekeeping example. Because if it's one building or...
No.
I think it would be that...
Volume, right?
Yeah,
the
volume.
Scale and volume.
Because the traffic is supposed to be the same as...
Right, right.
It's
just
as
it has that
educational component.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Yeah, so if there's things outside of, right, again... This is where you need to compare and contrast the home business definition against the farm retail novelty definitions.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of bake some into the other.
Do you want to make a motion on that?
No, we're not making motions yet.
Okay. we can move on to the second question.
But that's the direction that I would go. Probably expand the definition of the agricultural home business.
Mm-hmm.
To include, to be broader in the sense of more aligned with a small scale farm retail novelty.
But where's the trigger?
I don't know. We don't have to define that.
We're just talking about what process we're going to
right.
use. I mean, the trigger is obviously the hard part, and that's become, yeah.
Right. That's the prescriptive nature of the definition. But
But I think as you start reviewing and looking at what you have defined for your home business, right? Because there's prescriptive language in there for that. You can combine that with a broader definition, really, you know, of farm retail novelty. And then you maybe wrap some more language around the things that you mentioned about traffic, light, dust, noise, whatever.
And Jerry, if you
said cold,
you're the zoning administrator, right? Or the
latter end of my cold.
You're the designer.
Yes, I am.
Right? So if you say that is a home business permit, or that is, that's just crossed the line, that's going to be a CUP. If they don't want to go through the CUP process, they can come to us instead with an appeal of your decision. Right? They can appeal the administrator's decision. So either way, they're coming to us, but if they don't want to go through the...
Would they come to P&Z before going to the Board of Adjustment?
Or does it go straight to the Board of Adjustment? All the better.
It does go to Board of Adjustment.
The point is, we can try to make it as objective as possible, whether it is a home business permit or a CUP.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if they don't agree with your decision on it, they have recourse. Mm-hmm. They can appeal that decision.
Right.
Yes. So it might just be...
we don't want those.
The questionnaire, the form used, right? Mm-hmm. You're asking the right questions of how many of this and how much of that and hours and, you know, you ask those questions and then you get quantifiable answers.
Mm-hmm. So can we do a question on the letter? Is staff waiting for an answer on that? Do we feel like the way we've been doing the big complex retail novelty farms through a conditional use permit process should continue to go through a conditional use permit process?
The public hearing before P&Z, and then they go on to the Board of Adjustment.
Can we give direction to staff on that, and then perhaps also seeing if we need to tweak the home business permit regulations in that context?
Yeah. I'd like to provide an opportunity for smaller scale operations to explore smaller scale operations without having to go through the CUP process.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Just needs to be defined.
Yes.
I don't have to define it though, so it's easy for me to say that's what I would like.
Well, can't we leave it up to the administrative thing, you know, that they decide whether it's a home business?
They're going to put forth their recommendations on how to quantify it, and then they'll bring that back to us, and we'll say,
yeah.
That makes sense.
But what you don't want to do is leave them without a letter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't want to say it's your call. You need to give them some standards to make that decision by.
The governmental agency, they have to be able to defend and identify and quantify what happened and why it happened. Right?
Now, the big old complicated ones, I agree that, you know, we do have specifications now in terms of the farm retail and novelty process. As a result of having to deal with several of them, we've developed the process. So here's the things we looked at, and here's the things we expect, and so on.
They outline some of that in the process.
Which takes care of that part. But in terms of the delineation, in terms of where does it cross the line, mm-hmm. that's really the only thing we're talking about.
But I don't think it will expand much beyond what the current
home business
is. Mm-hmm. Right? It might add a few other parameters to it because you're also maybe expanding the definition mm-hmm. of what that means. But if I'm somebody that wants to, I don't want to give a specific example. I have a farm, and I want to start doing something different on the farm, and I really don't know what's going to come of it, but I want to try something. If the impact is small, then it should have a small process, right? Mm-hmm. If it's going to be a big... If it turns into something else, then it should have a different process.
Or even no process.
Okay, I'm going to break standard procedure here and make a motion to direct staff
to continue enhancing a CUP process rather than a purely administrative process, but to also take a fresh look at the home business permit standards to see if we can objectively allow more things without going to the CUP.
For the smaller operations.
Yeah.
Or however you define it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll second that motion. That was the motion, isn't it?
Yeah, because the one question we're trying to answer now is, should we continue down the CUP path like that we've been on or not?
Okay. Okay. Very helpful.
So can we just get a voice vote on that? All in favor? Aye.
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 All opposed? Same sign. Okay, then the next question is, did we like some of their guidance and standards that they talk about in the staff report? And if we make a motion on this, you're not asking us to approve that language, but just to affirm that you're headed in the right direction with some of those.
Ultimately, there would be an ordinance amendment
yeah.
that you would receive
yeah.
and review.
Can I just offer the emphasis on accessory and ancillary, besides being fun words, is good to emphasize that the amusement park can't outgrow the farm?
Which is what she mentioned. The focus yeah. should be mm-hmm. the agricultural use. That should be the mainstay. That's what
right.
it's all about. That's you want right. people to come and see your agricultural operation.
And the maintenance of the rural character of the area. I like all of your language about those things.
Okay.
One question I would just ask, and this is just to put a thought out there, is should we go the other way with the business, too, and say that if you're going to get a conditional use permit for this farm-related business, the farm part of it has to be essential to your business model.
Mm-hmm.
This wouldn't work if you plucked it out of rural Surrey County and dropped it in a commercial district. You know, that needs to be, you need to prove to us that having this business on your farm is key to making it work.
Right. You're not just doing it there because you already own the land.
Right.
You're doing it
exactly.
because it's fundamentally related to the farm.
And because the land is cheaper than in a commercial district, or the taxes are lower.
Right.
So I'm not saying that should be the case. I'm just kind of floating that out there as a thought experiment to maybe look at it that way. Good idea. But
I agree.
And did you find the more descriptive language was more what you were looking for, or was it the prescriptive language in the administrative process? I mean,
I think wherever you can make clear objective statements,
okay.
you should. But clearly, the CUP process is not all about clear objective statements.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely not about
right.
that. The intent is for it to not be about that.
Right. But you don't want to pass up an opportunity to be objective just because it's easier to write mushy language. You know, if there's an opportunity to be clear, if we can use square footages and acreages and traffic counts and numbers of visits, wherever we can, I think we should.
Okay.
Sorry, I kind of dominated that discussion.
There's a lot of discussion, too, internally about, like, how to deal with the amount of, like, parking space and the extra things that you need when you bring a lot of people to your property. And we struck it and then just primarily dealt with the additional that you might need, and that's where, because I think that's the only reference that we had to a percentage, like,
mm-hmm.
beyond, to me, more than 25% of your main parking area, and that's one way to kind of keep things in check within reason.
All right. Personally, I think that the defining thing should be based upon impact of the neighbors as to whether it's farm and novelty.
Right, but how do you measure that?
Yeah, I actually...
You ask them.
I like...
That's going to be based on perspective partially.
Well, of course
right.
it is.
In Center for Worship, we had wildly different perspectives, so
yeah.
when you listen to... I like the more subjective measure, but the protection of the rural character, right? And we all will have opinions about what that means, about what it means to protect the rural character, but that's why it's a commission, and people will bring it, and we'll all voice our opinions, and either it'll be yes, it does, or no, it doesn't. I mean, I don't know that there's a way to objectively measure that,
yeah, I mean.
But you'll know it when you see it.
I might also add that you might want to consider just striking the whole of the original language.
For
retail and novelty farm.
Do you want to go back to definition?
Because
that's really all we...
Right, but I mean, I what I don't want... So, full disclosure, I wrote that segment, that section of policy, when we just had to come up with something, right?
Way back when.
I never expected it to be still in existence. I thought we would have,
expunged it.
Done something more with it. But, so, I don't want you to get, caught up in what it says now and have that effect. What you're writing. And there's some mushy language in there already, and so just to add more mushy language trying to fix problems is probably not the right way to do it. But there's two angles I see, and I don't know how to reconcile these two things, but part of me wants to say, let's call this an agritourism ordinance, but part of me wants to say, no, there are some really serious, important value-added aspects of on-farm sales that are important to a new wave of farmers. And it's not about making people feel like they lived in the country for a day. It is about selling product and making more money selling an agricultural product. And so I don't want to limit it to just fluffy agritourism. You know what I mean? So I don't have a better answer.
But you can smell the two, though.
Yeah.
It can be productive.
Yeah.
Where can we find this original thing that you didn't, you referred to?
That's what's in the code.
Yeah.
Right now.
For the CFP?
Mm-hmm. No.
When it was written, though, were you thinking about existing situations where people have something that they're doing, that they're proud of, that they want to share with the outside world kind of thing? Because I'm not really seeing a lot of, we want to start something fresh and new here on this.
Yes, you're exactly right. So we had, in Story County, we have a bunch of what would be retail and novelty farms if they were started today. But they've existed, they pre-existed.
Like the Berry Patch.
Like the Berry Patch, Christmas tree farms, that sort of thing. And the intent was to have something on hand if they came and wanted to do something new or additional. And we had nothing to deal with it. We knew that it's different than just agricultural production because they're not producing and sending a product out. They're producing and inviting the public to come and experience or buy something there. And that can create a lot of impact.
I'm thinking where you get into the new and the fresh is where the novelty might come in. And
yeah.
There's a lot of things that are out there.
It might not be new or fresh. It might be we want to expand and do more.
Yeah.
Right. So, again, scale and impact and, the rural character, those are soft measures. I think those are the you need to look at those, and I like Aaron's idea of take this input, take your ideas, and start over. I mean that's not
because one of the other things is we don't want to inhibit creativity, entrepreneurialism.
Right.
Right.
We don't want to inhibit that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Good input.
But I think the comment that you made about the opportunity for agriculture to expand their business, right? It might be a new channel for them.
Yeah.
But that fundamentally is still tied to the rural character, and that's fundamentally tied to the farm as the primary business,
yep.
Not the agritourism as the primary business just happening on this farm.
On number two, the things you're asking for, I don't think we can consolidate that into a motion. But does it?
Did we provide?
Do we all agree that we need a little more guidance? We need more guiding language, and that you're on the right track with things like accessory and maintaining the rural character and maintaining the farm production as the principal use. Mm-hmm.
And make it small and concise and limited.
Two sentences.
No. I mean,
you know. Is that our challenge? Do it in two sentences?
We don't need 2008.
Two really long sentences.
We don't need as long a one as some of these are.
All right.
Without getting into the actual content and the thresholds we discussed any further, is there any other direction you feel like you want to give the staff tonight?
No, I think that based on our prior conversations, I think this is a hard one, and I think we're together. We're heading in the right direction on this. So that's
big. Just keep one word in mind: simplicity. I
want to write that down.
We want.
Okay.
Predictable.
What's what's the next?
All right. Item. Any other questions, staff, on that item?
Thank you.
The next item is Southridge Street.
Right away, vacation.
Months up.
Yeah,
you
want
to take it or you want to take a break?
I don't know what it is. If we can get through it, then I can take it and then leave it. But otherwise, I've got to go.
Is this a long thing or is this a...
Are we taking action on this tonight or this is...
It's an action item.
Okay.
Equipment, tell us what this is about.
This was carried over from the 2015 work program. It's a situation involving a single family dwelling that's on the north side of a cul-de-sac on the Southridge Road. It's located northwest of the city of Ames, southwest of the city of Gilbert. It's about, you can see Ames corporate limits down here. Gilbert corporate limits. It's over 2 miles in each direction, so it almost borders the Boone County, Story County corporate limits, just east of 500th Avenue. It's in the Woods subdivision, lot 16. We have a situation where a house was constructed too close to the front yard setback and was also constructed too close to the side yard setback. What's before you is a request to vacate part of the road right-of-way, a portion of the bulb. The county went through a process in 2002 to vacate the entire bulb, but there were problems with the legal description, and so the whole process was deemed to be void. To be honest with you, I don't know why it's taken this long. It was on the work program in 2015. We're at a point where the property owners who have ownership of the lots adjacent to this right-of-way are in agreement to how much of that bulb should be vacated. We'll show you what that looks like. So we're dealing with the property owner at 6625 Southridge. I think I skipped ahead here. We're going to get to it.
Who's the advocate here?
Harris.
Is the property owner?
Lloyd Harris.
It is the property.
Is the property owner. House was built in 2002, again, R1 zoning, it's a 40-foot setback, it's about 30 feet from the front yard setback. The attached garage appears to be on the common property line. A previous property owner by the name of Vilwalk sold a portion of his parcel. It's a triangular-shaped parcel. There were problems with that transaction, legal description, believe it or not. They say things happen in twos. This was an example of that. This is a drawing that Emily put together, which was very helpful, that kind of shows what's going on. It was sent to the adjacent landowners within a quarter of a mile. So the crosshatch area that's yellow is what's being vacated to the Harrises. The green or the blue crosshatch would represent their parcel plus this triangle piece. Mr. Harris did hire an attorney who's working on correcting the deed, and they're working out those details for that side yard setback. But again, this affects just that portion of that bulb. This is looking north. We're in the site photos. This is the gravel road. 5677 South Swing. This is the Swain family on the southwest corner. East side, 6600 South Ridge, the Crow family. This is the Harris property, 6625.
South Ridge. If you look to the west of where the drive is, where that bald portion is, the grade drops off pretty substantially. So it's not even really possible to do a road.
So that bald is actually not constructed or in use. It's just defined.
Defined, correct.
Okay.
So, and this is part of the space that they use right now, which is within the right-of-way for turnaround. The previous, or the current property owner, Crow, they park vehicles within there. They want to be able to continue to do that. They will still be able to do that even when that portion is vacated. We did have conceptual review September 8th. Assessor's Department did talk about the fact that all three pieces, which we agree, should be adjoined into one tax parcel. Auditor's office was extremely helpful for me and staff into trying to figure out the history of what the problems were when we went through this process in 2002. They did actually help with the legal description as well. Engineering division did support what was ultimately agreed upon by the property owners. Staff supports it as well. We'll have a situation where the applicant will meet the front yard setback. And again, they're working on the deed and the legal for the triangle piece. They signed an agreement, which was submitted to our office October 19. And we sent the notices the 26th of October. We received no comments, phone, email, in person. Points to consider in evaluating their request is through this vacation, which again was started back in 2002, was carried forward to the 2016 work program. We're going to have a situation where this dwelling will meet the front yard setback. General public will still be able to use the street. It's a public street, publicly dedicated but privately maintained. They'll be able to use it for turnaround. The Crow family will be able to park a vehicle or vehicles within that right of way. And again, the western portion of that bald is really not even, you can't build a road in it because of the topography. So that brings us to the recommendation is for the Planning and Zoning Commission to recommend approval. This is administrative item 01-16. And again, the goal would be to get this on the agenda for the Board of Supervisors for their November 15th meeting. And in the interim, we've got to send out notices again, part of that meeting for Board of Supervisors.
My only question.
You remember this?
No, I don't remember this. Okay. When was it started?
2002.
2002.
How far did that get? Did that go up to the Board of Supervisors?
I think it went through the full process, but then they learned after the fact, after things were recorded, that there were errors.
So if the Board of Supervisors tabled it back in 2002, I know why.
Yeah, I think it was full action, and then just, it was discovered that
there was a lot of things tabled back then.
My only question is, why just vacate that little wedge? Why not vacate the whole bulb and just leave it at a stub and let the land go back to the, proportionally back to the lot owners?
Well, and again, with this, the probably need to have that blown up.
I guess maybe what I'm asking is, 5 years from now, are we going to be seeing a request to vacate the rest of the bulb?
I don't think so, because, actually what we submitted was to vacate the bulb, because that's the process that we went through, and not everybody agreed to it. So at this conceptual review meeting, believe it or not, we were able to come to an agreement on what this should look like, and with that, we ran with it.
So
everybody's at the table agreeing with what this should be, because that's a big part of it. Is with these vacations, everybody that has interest in it should agree to it.
Yeah, because I don't want to make this even worse than it is, but
they don't
look at the piece that you're going to be left with, right?
Where
which is the incomplete bowl, right?
That's my biggest concern is it's like how silly it's going to look on a parcel map. That's all
I'm just looking at
the property on here. Marvin wants to be able to park in here, and if this all goes to this family, then they'll
right. No, I'm not even saying that. I'm saying cut it off
at the end of the straight part, right? And then have one part go to 5677, one part go to 6600, and one part go to 6600, and then just cut it off and then make, because otherwise you're going to end up with like this 40% of a pie shaped kind of.
Well, you want to get involved in paying right for surveying and the cost to change abstracts.
Yeah.
I see.
Because there's a lot to that. So they said this way.
This way, only 6625 is paying for any of that, and then it's all taken care of.
Right.
The next question is obviously, how in the world do you end up accidentally constructing something over somebody else's property line and too close to the clearance? How does that happen?
You get zoning permits that provide information, and that's what you know, it's from the property owner, and that's what you make your decisions on, and I'm sure that's what happened.
All right.
And it was wrong.
All right. I have to leave, so I'm going to make a motion that we recommend approval of, what is this, Administration 1-16, is this the Board of Adjustments that we're recommending?
This would be Board of Supervisors.
Make this recommendation to the Board of Supervisors per staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
A second.
Is that you, Nancy?
No.
Sorry. That's why I asked. All right, we have a motion by Smith and a second by Holstrom to forward staff's recommendation to the Board of Supervisors as our recommendation. Roll call, please.
Miller?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Gable?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Holstrom?
Yes.
Excellent. All right.
I was just going to say that.
Marvin's out. No. All right, back to order. Okay. Special events ordinance. What has changed?
Yes. We're on the third draft. We were supposed to cover this at the last month, but since we didn't have a meeting, in the interim, because we didn't have a meeting, we did have a conceptual review. We had a sit down with some of the departments here in the building. Engineering was there. Auditor's office staff was there. We did try to reach out with all the ambulance providers, the firefighting departments, city officials, and we received zero response. We received zero phone calls. Nobody contacted
us.
Well, it could mean a lot of things. I don't know exactly what it means, but the engineering division said they like the fact that we have a higher threshold. They said that they still get contacted for the smaller events with regard to road blockades and such. And one of the representatives from the auditor's office, who does a lot of bicycling events, also liked the fact that for most of the things that they would be involved in, they wouldn't need a permit. But he also said he likes the fact that we are making contact with these different agencies to communicate what's being proposed, because he stressed the importance of the public safety of the people that are involved and the spectators that are involved. But again, with this ordinance, it would be standalone. Right now, we have a process which we checked our ordinance, and it's been in the book since 1986, which affects the music events, the religious events. This would streamline the CUP process, which again involves Planning and Zoning Commission, and then ultimately Board of Adjustment. It could be about a two and a half month process. So again, it would streamline the process. We would be dealing with larger groups that would have an impact on site, on neighbors potentially, on the roads. We made an adjustment to, we had an exemption for farm auctions. There was a suggestion that was made by one of the commissioners to put in a provision that if it relates to the exemption that's under state law, the agricultural exemption, which would provide some flexibility for the director at the director's discretion. If there's a connection with some type of ag activity, that would be exempt instead of listing all the types of things like farm auctions, farm sales, farm progress show. Again, if there's some connection to agricultural exemption that's identified under state law, then there would be no reason for a special event ordinance. Also added for multiple day events, you know, some of these things may be multiple days during the week or multiple times throughout the year that only one application would be needed. Emergency management suggested that we have something about weather problem, weather issues, weather plans, which we thought was a good idea. We don't have the specific fee amount in there because it's going to be determined by a schedule that's set by the Board of Supervisors. We're thinking a nominal fee of $50. That's what we charge for home business permit applications. The we changed the amount of time needed to make a submittal. It did say 30 days. We changed that to 21 days, but again, that's still left to the discretion of the director. And trust me, we work with people all the time. We have you know, schedules set up, but if we can get done, accomplished within the limits of the regulations, we always try to work with people to the extent that we can. It's being reviewed still by the county attorney's office. One of the things, too, is we had a quarterly report. We did mention that we were working on this ordinance, and we told the board that it was an administrative process. They communicated to us that they thought that they should also have some review, and primarily on a consent basis, on a consent item basis, not that we'd have to do a presentation for it. Because a lot of these things are probably involved, like liquor licenses, yeah. And so it would just be the rest of the picture, and we would, as staff, do a memo and provide the background information that would help them to make their decisions about the liquor license and the special event. So Jerry, those are the primary changes.
Why was this brought up? How did this get started to revise? We have a policy now, correct?
There is a CUP process for musical events.
Okay. Why are we wanting to get more involved with this and update? Where is that coming from?
Part of it's from staff, I think, because again, we have a CUP process, which is more costly, more time consuming. It involves the P&Z. It involves Board of Adjustment. And with this, it would be mostly an administrative review, less costly, it'd be more efficient.
It was also on the work program list when you do that.
Right.
We got to be very careful about the next work program, I'll tell you that.
It wasn't you didn't write that work program, you inherited it.
No.
Yeah.
So you're telling me the law enforcement.
We're trying to make it better.
The law enforcement really doesn't give a hoot one way or the other. They had no response.
I can tell you that we sent out a copy of the draft to the police, fire departments, and police, city officials,
and they just didn't care.
Well, we didn't get a response for whatever reason. I don't know why that was, but they didn't respond.
Why would you even send to city officials? Is it in the unincorporated area of the county?
Because we typically would do that. I mean, if it's an event that. That's within
overlap.
Reasonable proximity. We do that on a courtesy basis.
I think Jerry and Nancy, I get where you're coming from with those questions, but I don't know that I put so much stock in the fact that they didn't respond. They don't respond to anything. They make a habit of not responding to anything. How many things? You send them everything, right? A new subdivision proposal, a rezoning.
We send cities a lot of information on a lot of things that we're working on.
Although I would say anyone ever has an issue or a question about something, they're quick to respond.
If they catch it.
Yeah.
If it doesn't go straight in a circular fire.
And it could be that what they saw they liked.
So, a couple of.
And this is not an action item, it's just, again, we want to provide input about where we're at. The direction that we're going and to find out if we're on the right path. The goal would be to bring to you a draft, it'd be a final draft for action that we would take ultimately to the Board of Supervisors for action.
So I have a couple of quick thoughts, starting with the big picture, which is
I don't think we need to see this in a work session again. I think we tweaked it and tweaked it, and we have probably just irresolvable differences on whether we should go approve this or not. So I think the next time we see it, it should be in ordinance form where we're asked to take action on it. I just don't think that more work sessions are going to get us any closer to it. It's going to be a close vote, I think, no matter what. And to be perfectly honest, I can go either way on it right now. So what I like about it is that it replaces the CUP, at least for some things. I love going to administrative processes when you can and speeding it up for people and make it simply more simple for people. But I'm also just not very passionate about it. You know, I know that within the next couple of years, there's going to be some event where you're glad you have this. But I'm not sure that...
Like barn refilling out of...
Yeah, exactly, right. Sometime down the road, you're going to be glad we had that in place. But is it worth years of it sitting on the shelf being unused or
exactly.
or causing aggravation for people for whom it wasn't really designed or that wouldn't have had a great impact anyway just to catch that one event every 5 years? That's where
exactly.
that's where I'm on the wire, where I could go either way. So on the fence about it.
Well, it's just like I've stated before, you know, in any type of business, and I still contend that the government is the largest business. Even here in Story County, it is the largest business in Story County, the government. Now, just like in any business, if you have one thing happen, that's a rare event. If it starts happening three or four or five times again, then by golly, we better have a policy. But I agree with you. We haven't even had a rare event. So why even do anything about it?
Wasn't the part of this was to mitigate the situation with Center Grove Orchard when they were having different events at their location?
Well, they had a dog show, which was determined to be acceptable and
right.
within the confines right. of farm retail and novelty.
But this goes beyond that. It's just one or two days.
Right. Board of adjustment.
It would give you an extra tool in your toolbox, though, for things that pop up that you know you have to address, but there's no clear-cut way to do it. I get that. I mean, I can see that.
Do you know how many, Jerry, other counties in the state of Iowa have a special...
I know Polk County had one.
Okay.
Had?
They
in the past tense? Do they still
have it? Yeah, they have one.
Okay.
And they dealt with it through the CUP.
Through the CUP.
Mm-hmm.
See, I love that part of this. I mean, if it takes something out of the CUP process that takes months and gets it down to a couple of weeks with no ill effects, I love that part of it.
Because in reality, that's usually the last thing you think of when you're on a committee. It's like, oh my gosh, okay, do we need anything to do this? And a lot of times there was no time because it's the following week. So then you have to, you know, decide what the response is going to be.
How about, let me throw something out there I just thought of. How about if you have within your office a list of things that a coordinator, an event creator, goes to, and you just read it off to him, saying, listen, you need to talk to the engineering department regarding road. You need to talk to the fire department, make sure that they're aware of it. Okay? You know, you just have a list to read to them and say, here's the things that you really ought to take care of. You don't need anything from us, but, you know, if you want us to email you a copy of this list, more than happy to. I mean, that's really no cost to y'all. It's no cost to the person that's putting the event together. And just that, as a service of information.
Isn't that what you do now, though?
Well, Darren told us that they get contacted quite a bit for small things, and I think sometimes they try to accommodate and do barricades and such. But, again, I think he was happy with the fact that we were really trying to address the larger activities and not getting involved with the smaller events.
But if somebody called you right now, you have this special events ordinance in place. If someone called you right now and said, we want to have a, you have a CUP for a music festival.
Well, if it relates to right. those.
But let's say it's Rag Dry. Rag Dry's coming through. We got to have this huge camping area
with one night.
With entertainment for one night. Well, what you would do is you talk to that event organizer and say, okay, you have to contact engineering if you need to close any roads. And it's a good idea to talk to them anyway because you need to let them know where the traffic's going to be at this. And you need to talk to sanitation and health department about. Right. So you would do that normally. You do that anyway. That's what you would do now.
As an organizer.
But I'm not sure it's a particularly innovative approach to local government to say, call five different people. That's our answer. Call five different people. I'm not sure that just defaulting to regulation is particularly innovative either, but I know it's not innovative in good governance to say, like we do so often already in the county, oh, we don't do that in this office. You need to go to that office, that office.
Yeah, that's,
that
a
office.
That's a mess.
And that's what you'd have to do now, right? You'd have to give five phone numbers for them to call instead of saying we can handle that here.
It would be one department coordinating everything.
Right.
Be what?
It would be one department, our department, coordinating the submittal, application submittal.
I think most coordinators of events of any size whatsoever, like you said, are going to think about that anyway.
They're not going to think about it in time. I've coordinated events, and sometimes that one just, you get everything else lined up, like, you know,
a week left, right?
I've got, 3 weeks out, and it's like, oh, okay. And then we submit the paperwork, we never hear back, and we're like, well, I hope they approved our event.
How would the public even know they have to get a special use permit?
You know, that's part of the struggle sometimes.
Has anybody ever asked you for one?
We can use our website. There's a lot of different things that we can do to get the word out there.
Would they get a permit? Would be the next thing.
Well, so one thing that I think you need to be cautious about with this is the potential for lawsuits that you open up, because some of these things, some of these events that would require a permit to come and go in 2 days without you knowing, but the neighbor knew, and then the neighbor's going to get on Story County's case about not enforcing their regulations. So as long as you have a regulation in place,
you should be enforced.
You know, it's
well, no regulation means no liability.
If you don't have one that came and went in a day and the neighbor was mad for a day,
exactly.
They get over it. That's why I'm on the fence on this. Yeah.
But you're right about the liability. If we don't have an ordinance, we're not liable.
Well, it's
and it's such a rare event, if ever.
It's to look out for the neighbors. It's to look out for the people who are in the event. Yeah. It's to look out for the participants, for the spectators.
Yep.
You know what? Everything in life does not have to be dummy-proof. Or, golly, I don't want to offend somebody-proof. Not everything in life. I mean, where's personal responsibility? Where's being an adult? I vote for no ordinance. We don't have liability.
No, we're not calling for a vote right now.
And I know, but that was, I used the word vote in terms of, hey, here's my opinion.
Here's what I think is probably going to happen with this process. It's on a Board of Supervisors approved work program. So unless Jerry goes to the Board of Supervisors tomorrow and says, hey, there's really no support for this in the Planning Commission, do you still want me to prepare an ordinance? And they say, nah, don't worry about it. We're going to see an ordinance, and we'll have to take action on it.
If they say, don't worry about it?
Unless they say,
okay. All right.
Jerry has to, because it's on his work program, he has to go and report progress on it. And they're probably going to want us to go forward and review an ordinance and take a stance on it and make a recommendation. So that's why I'm saying I just don't think that we can work on this ordinance anymore, have it satisfy what you guys think is a worthwhile piece of policy, and get resounding approval from this commission. I think
it's a waste of time. Let the Board of Supervisors decide if we want to go forward with
it.
But
if the Board of Supervisors wants to see an ordinance, it has to go through us.
That's fine. Then we'll take it up.
Okay.
But until the Board of Supervisors says so, then...
And when you say, until the Board of Supervisors says so, you don't mean necessarily official action. It's okay for Jerry to just go and take the pulse on it?
Well, here's the thing. You cannot get the pulse of all three at the same time. Because, you know, the... what do they call that?
Open meeting laws.
Huh? Open meeting laws, right? And so it would have to be addressed in a formal Board of Supervisors meeting.
Or a meeting where there's a notice posted, and that's one of the things that I wanted to get to is our joint meeting will be December 7th with P&Z and the Board of Supervisors, and this is something that can be discussed, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I just hesitate to have another discussion about it because we're going to be just doing this again, only we'll be doing it with the Board of Supervisors present.
Okay.
What I'd rather see you do, Jerry, is you have a monthly report, biweekly report?
Quarterly.
To the Board of Supervisors?
Yes.
Yeah, quarterly. So the next one will be January into December. And my goal is to work on our 2016 because we're going to be working on 2017. And
honestly,
we're working hard to get through the things that we're supposed to do.
This is just my opinion. I'd rather you just put an action item on this on the next Planning Commission meeting, and we either forward a positive recommendation or a negative recommendation, and we move on. Because I just don't think...
Without going to the Board of Supervisors, you mean?
Well, our recommendation would be to the Board of Supervisors.
Right. And that's part of my goal. That's one of the things I was going to tell you. We would have a final version of an ordinance for action, and it can be decided.
Yeah. I just don't think we're in a position to tell you scrap the ordinance. I think you have to bring it to us, and if need be, we have to send it on with a negative recommendation.
But do we need any further draft other than this one? I mean, you know, let's go with this, take it to the Board of Supervisors, and let it go from there.
I don't think so. I mean, you might have a typo or something.
Yeah, there might be some tweaks from the county attorney's office as far as the regulatory part of it or something.
But there is a section of the Board of Supervisors meeting beyond just the consent agenda. Now, within the consent agenda, here's a question for you. Within the consent agenda, those items, are they all signed off by the Board of Supervisors prior to being on the consent? Because they have to be presented to the public. I know that.
Some things that we deal with require a discussion and action separately. There's some things that are permitted to be on the consent agenda, and then they take action on the body of things. They have the right to pull things out for discussion before they take action. So...
why don't you go talk to one of the supervisors, which is allowed, just one of them, to get the input as to how to go forward with it?
Well, like what Aaron is suggesting, and that's what I was going to suggest, is we'll put together a final version of what the ordinance will be, and then for action for the Planning and Zoning Commission.
And like you said, we can recommend a negative.
Whatever that recommendation is.
Absolutely. I think we need to stop having work sessions hoping that we're going to get everybody to vote unanimously on a version of this ordinance. Instead, I think we should take a piece of policy that you think is actually going to be useful and let us decide whether we're going to recommend approval or not. And honestly, it'll probably depend on who attends that night, what recommendation you're going to get, because I think we're roughly split.
December 7th.
But then at least the Board of Supervisors can decide what they want to do with it, and you guys can scrub it from your work program.
We didn't come up with this. We inherited this.
Okay, so you're going to put it on the next month's agenda.
That's the plan.
And then we'll be done with it, and then the next Tuesday you can go to the BOS.
Jerry, what do you think? Do you think there's any more value to be had in us discussing?
Not at all. I'd rather have something that we can look at and decide whether we want to approve.
Yes or no.
Okay.
And then let the board decide whether to go further with it.
Okay.
Good. All right. We'll call that agenda item done, which means we are on to... Oh, we put public comments to the end. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
You're not public.
We'll talk about that afterwards.
That doesn't need to be bumped to the
huh?
No, I am.
I'm just messing with you, you know.
Staff comments?
Just P&Z and Board of Supervisors, we're going to plan that joint session that we have, at least that we've had the last 3 or 4 years, on work program items. We've got, I think, just a handful of things. We're trying to wrap up some things. A few things are going to get carried over, but my plan would be to have most of our C2C implementation things. We've got 16 things that we're supposed to be working on. We'll fold those in to the 2017 work program. And then again, if there's any other items that you think we need to be addressing, you know, we can discuss it. And it's for a game for 2017 work session.
When is this?
December 7th.
Is that our regular meeting night?
It'd be a regular meeting night, and then the board supervisors would come probably for the first hour, from 4 to 5. And on an upside, we, at our last quarterly report to the board of supervisors, we reported the growth of our department, our permits, development applications. A lot of the things that we do are have increased from the third quarter, and then we compared to the last 2 years. And so we requested a new planner position, and that was approved.
Wow.
By the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah. Great.
So we posted a position for that.
So are you both employees or one intern?
Amelia's an intern.
Okay.
Emily's a planner. So for the December 7 work session, we'll have C2C. We've got an amendment, the implementation, or amendment process, actually. We've got some language that Leanne and she's been working with staff on that. We'll have a text amendment, YSS, Youth and Shelter Services, has a plan to use a property on the south side of Ames, south of 30, west of Dakota, and there's nothing in our ordinance that addresses human service type uses, so we've got a request to amend the ordinance, so you'll see that. We were hoping Farm Retail Novelty has something solid in the form of an ordinance. Fernald was on the work program, so these two have been working on some ideas. This would just be discussion on things that we can do to maybe
help. All this on the 7th?
Well,
yeah, we may have to it,
but and then commercial construction and demolition. Amelia's been working really hard on that. And so I don't know if we'll have that. That'll be just discussion, probably.
Okay.
But that's primarily it.
Okay.
Any There's a lot of things going on.
Yeah. That's good.
Well, I'm good time then to teach you, see.
Okay. Any commission comments?
I move to adjourn.
Give a second.
Second.
Stand adjourned.
Thank you.